Hello, and welcome to Depression Cure, the show where we discuss the latest tools, the ancient practices, the cutting-edge research to help you take back control of your emotional well-being. My name is Steve Ilardi. I'm a professor of psychology. I'm a clinician. I'm a researcher. I'm a writer. I'm an NBA analyst, and guess what? This year, I'm also a podcaster. I'm delighted, delighted to be with you, and I'm joined, as always, by my intrepid co-host. He's going to introduce himself.
I mean, the real question is, like, are you a podcaster for a year? You know, is this just like a New Year's resolution for you, or like, are you going to go the distance? Time will tell. We're at the halfway point of the journey here, so I guess we'll, you know, we're going to see.
You can feel the palpable suspense in the air. My own intuition, for what it's worth, is I think it's going to take. I have a feeling this may last beyond this year.
Yeah. I mean, you're comfy in the space. I was like sitting back here listening to you doing that intro. I was like, yeah, Steve's got this, man. Like, to be fair, like, you were podcasting before it was cool. You've been doing, you know, university lectures for decades and decades. And so this is just an extension of that craft. It's just a new medium for you to channel those powers into.
You know, you know this. I've learned so much from you just in the space of 7 months that we've been doing this. It's been an incredible journey. So it's all, folks, I hope you've all had this experience. When you get a chance to play whatever the game is, to play with someone who's at the next level, it's like, not only do you step up your own game, but you're picking up all these little tricks of the trade, all these little secrets. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun to be learning from a master of the craft. So anyway, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do it. So, like, right back at you. And so, look, my name's Hugh James. I'm a writer. I'm a podcaster from Belfast, Northern Ireland. I've been on what feels like a bit of a lifelong journey with depression and addiction. We usually kind of earmark it as the last 15 years. And I've had this amazing journey towards healing and towards wholeness. I am a podcaster by trade as such. He says as his voice is going and he needs to take a quick sip of water.
Oh, perfect.
Here, fill in for me, bro. Cover me.
Sadly, I've got nothing other than just to say that was so smoothly done and executed. Brilliant.
So this podcast has really brought me out of my shell, and it's allowed me to kind of explore different areas of my craft, because I am, as you know, Steve, I'm an interviewer primarily. You know, I do some solo stuff. I've done some monologue stuff. I've done quite a lot of speaking in a wide variety of spheres, but this is kind of the first time I've co-hosted something where we are the topic as such. Do you know what I mean? The content relies on us. And so it's been really, really fun, particularly from a content creation perspective, to be meeting with you, scoping out episodes. I've learned a lot about collaboration in this process, because I am a bit of a soul trader by profession. It's usually just me doing my thing and doing things the way that I want to. So this mental health podcast marriage has been extremely beneficial for me in my own journey and even my own career. So yeah, super fun. As I said, I live in Ireland. I love it over here. I am a husband of 6 years. We just had our 6th anniversary over the month off, which is really cool.
Wow, congratulations. That's amazing. Thank you very much.
You're like, dude, that's chump change. Come on, bro.
Well, I, you know, it's hilarious. I told my students the other day, I don't even know how it came up, but I was like, yeah, my wife and I started dating 38 years ago.
Yo.
And there was an audible gasp. I was like, well, okay, in fairness, we were like 6 years old. No.
It was back in the olden days, you know, that's just the way it was.
Yeah. But
well,
no,
I'm also a father. So, you know, our wee girl just turned 2.
And she's delightful.
Yeah. We've got an amazing community over here, and surrounded by some real amazing personal and professional friends and circles. And yeah, it's been quite an exciting journey. I've lived overseas for a few years. I lived in New York City for 3 years. I lived in Rwanda for a while. I lived in Nepal. I think I've traveled to like 20 plus different places, which is like the, you know, big millennial flex. And totally over the traveling now. Like, I've turned into like a very small Irish village country dad type folk that is living a completely different life than I ever thought I would, but I'm enjoying every step of the way. So there's my long extended intro for you.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, thank you. You've also spent quite a bit of time in Germany, I think we should say. But
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other half is German, and so that brings us over there quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, so listen, today I'm really excited because I've been waiting for this episode for a long time. Hugh is going to, he's been generous enough to offer to talk, probably for the first time in great detail publicly, about his own journey with depression. And depression is really the area, I think, that first brought us together in friendship. And Hugh's going to talk about that a little bit as well. But I guess really without further ado, I want to just kick us off, Hugh, with a very basic question, which is, what was your very first encounter with depression that you can recall?
Yeah, awesome. Let's do this. So I, perhaps like a lot of people listening, or maybe totally different to people listening, my first encounter with depression was quite early on in the journey. So for a bit of context, I had like a really great childhood and was a very kind of happy-go-lucky sort of guy. Was incredibly shy, wasn't super nerdy. Like I always say, I was like Peter Parker before the spider bite. That was just me. I just lived in that lane forever. Like big glasses, video gaming, not really like that confident, but like was pretty good on a one-on-one setting. And my life radically changed at the age of 11 when I got what we call over here glandular fever. I think you guys in the States call it mono. And it's kissing disease. And my kind of bit on that is like, I was so devastated when the doctor told me I had kissing disease because I'd never kissed anybody. And I was like, that's just not fair. That just goes against the law of the universe. Like, oh man. And like a lot of people, that kind of threw me for six. And I think I had like a 6 month period where I was bedridden and really weak, like couldn't climb the stairs. So had quite a big viral response to it, as we would refer to it now. And off the back of that, just kind of always had this feeling that like, I'm not really right. Something isn't 100% well with me here. And off the back of that, I experienced a lot of suicidality, experienced a lot of incredibly low mood, felt myself really withdrawn from really everybody in my life, and even pushing the most intimate relationships in my life, which were my parents at that time, completely pushing them away and stonewalling them, like not letting them in at all. And that sort of behavior continued for a number of years. I then kind of got over mono, as it were, and started kind of like getting back on the scene, going back to school, and would experience some real, real highs and some real good times. But anytime I would get sick, it wouldn't take much. It would take like a chest infection or maybe like a bad flu. And I would find myself back in that similar place that I was when I was 11, where I was lowest of the lows, didn't want to see anybody. Much to the confusion of kind of everyone around me, like the doctors were kind of scratching their heads, like, what is this? My parents were really worried. They were like, is there something seriously wrong with this guy? You know, I remember going to see some specialists and stuff like that. And we couldn't really put our finger on it. And with hindsight, I now kind of know that I was experiencing kind of telltale signs of depression. And I was experiencing depressive episodes kind of throughout those early years.
It sounds like, with the benefit of hindsight, you know it was depression. But what I'm taking away from this is that depressive illness was having this profound negative impact on your life, but you weren't really sure what it was, what was going on. And this is true for a lot of people, I think. But yeah. So one big question that just jumps right out is, when was the first time the word depression came onto your radar?
That's a really, really good question. Yeah, you're on the money. So like, I was going to say funny story, not really funny story, but we'll use the expression anyway. Like I probably was like 16 or 17 the first time that that word kind of crossed my desk, as it were.
Oh man. So 5 years of...
Yeah,
of,
you're talking like 5 or 6 years of just like walking around feeling like, you know, do I have a tumor? Like, do I have cancer? Like, what the hell is wrong with me? Am I just a worthless being? You know what I mean? Like all these questions wrapped up in all that hormonal teenage angst, like we all know the drill. And I remember, I couldn't even tell you exactly what it was, but I remember hearing somebody talk about depression, and I probably, being the millennial that I am, like went and Googled it. I remember reading the classic kind of bullet point symptoms of depression. And I actually remember crying, because it was the first time in my life where I was like, oh my goodness, I feel seen for the first time ever. And I've always been really into words. I've always been really into English in school and reading and writing and poetry and Eminem and all that sort of stuff. You know, the modern poets of our time. And I just remember like to have vocabulary in my hands, to have words to put to my lived experience was such a relief and such like a revelation. And it really then set me on the journey of working on my mental health. And, you know, in fairness, like, you know, I was born in mid-90s, we'll say. And so even just culturally over here in Ireland, we typically have like quite a lot of taboo and stigma around mental health. We've got a bit of a keep your mouth shut sort of culture, particularly among men. And there's that whole masculinity bit in there as well. And to be fair, like there was just no dialogue that I had encountered in my social settings, in my faith circles, in my school environment, you know, to be fair to them, even the medical community over here, it just wasn't on anyone's radar, to my knowledge, in terms of that general practitioner doctor. That has totally changed now in the 15 years since. And I'm really encouraged to see the younger generation come through and be very vocal about it and have that awareness, because I just know how amazing it felt for me not to feel alone and to feel like there's actually, I've shared this thing before where it's like, you know, the scariest thing in a horror movie, especially the old horror movies, is the buildup.
Yeah.
To the reveal of the monster, right? It's so Absolutely. Scary. And then you see the monster and it's not scary. It's actually so disappointing. You're like, oh, I don't want to see your whack 60s monster. It looks so terrible. Like, but the build up to it, whenever it's unknown, if you don't see it, it's terrifying. And I think actually whenever I was able to name the dragon that I've been battling against all those years, particularly at such a young age, I felt such a sense of peace, but also a sense of empowerment where I was like, all right, I know who you are. I know that there's some tools out there. I'm going to get out there and I'm going to get after you. And so it was a really exciting experience.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's incredible the way you framed it. And one of the big questions that pops for me right away is you read about depression just in your own research as a 16-year-old. Where did that take you? Did you then bring it up at some point with the doctor, with your parents, with a therapist? How did the next years of your journey look once you were equipped now with this understanding of, oh, I think depressive illness is what's been affecting me, but then, okay, now what?
So this is where things kind of get interesting. I've never shared this with you before, okay? So you'll think this is kind of funny. Whenever I started to explore, you know, what is depression, what works, what doesn't work, I actually slowly started to realize that I had intuitively already implemented some things in my life that had made me feel good, or that I noticed had made a big difference. And then I was starting to see, oh, this is actually a legit thing that you're supposed to do. So I remember going to see a specialist doctor who specialized in chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME, do you guys call it over there?
Yep.
And dude, you know what he prescribed me? And we thought it was the weirdest thing. We felt like it was the equivalent of going to see the witch doctor. He prescribed me to get a kitchen chair and sit outside in our back garden for 1 hour first thing in the morning. And now after all the work we've done, I'm Brilliant. Like, oh my goodness, he knew about light therapy. And so I actually had a therapeutic light box whenever I was like younger. So, you know, maybe 15, somewhere around that stage. And I used to resent sitting in front of it. I didn't believe it. I didn't buy into it. I also realized that like exercise was really good for me and made a big difference. But I think just because of kind of like the aftertaste of mono and some of the physical implications of that, I always struggled with exercise because I would overdo it. You know, I'd be listening to Linkin Park in the gym, pumping iron, you know, feeling like a legend, and then I would be in bed for like a week afterwards. So my story is also definitely a story of learning to accept limits as well. But other than those things, the only real pathway that we had at that time in Ireland, in my experience, was the talk therapy road and antidepressants. Now, for lots of different reasons I'm not going to get into today, my family did not want me to pursue that route. And so
the route of antidepressants or talk therapy?
The route of antidepressants. So I never explored that avenue.
Okay.
But I did go down the talk therapy road, and I kind of let slip earlier on, I kind of come from a community of faith. And so we would have been big churchgoers and stuff. And so what then happened was I kind of fell into this kind of very niche world of depression where it's all psychological, it's all spiritual, it's all to do with trauma. It's all to do with adverse experiences that happen to you. And if you can somehow just get all that out of you with the right therapist, with the right book, the right conference, that was our magic pill as such. The magic bullet was some sort of like psychological release that would finally relieve your psyche of this burden and you would be free. Yeah. So I went on this big journey of therapy, and I've been in therapy lots, and I actually am a big proponent of therapy. It really helped me with so many areas of my life, but not so much the depression. Okay. Like, help me with a lot of family trauma, help me with a lot of relationship stuff, help me with a lot of confidence, blah, blah, blah. So I was experiencing all these benefits, but I was still getting depressed. And it was only until my physical symptoms improved to the point where I was able to keep exercise consistent, I was able to really engage in a social life and really close-knit community. And I mean, deep, deep relationships that I was with some of them this morning, you know, like they're relationships I've carried throughout my whole life. They're at my wedding. They held my daughter in their arms when she was born. That's when I started to experience enough of an uplift to get my head kind of like above the baseline to enter back into normal society. I think I missed maybe like 3 years of school combined. And only from the ages of like 16 to 18 that I was able to kind of like come back to the real world, if that makes sense. And when I was 18, I had this ridiculous opportunity to go to Rwanda for 3 months. I don't think I've shared this with you either, but Rwanda was my big antidepressant moment. I had gone to Rwanda. I think I was there for 3 or 4 months. And it was the first time in my adult life, you know, in my working memory, that I remembered not getting depressed once. And I just felt like a superhero. I felt so different. And again, on hindsight, what were we doing? There was no screens. We were doing hard manual labor every day. We were in the sun a lot. We were sleeping 12 hours a day. We were eating whole foods. There was no junk food. It was tight-knit community. I was living with the people that I was serving. And I just experienced what you describe as like almost like a quasi hunter-gatherer lifestyle. And I felt the therapeutic effects of that to the point where when I came back from that, from the ages of 18 to 25, you know, and even just in recent years, I was always chasing Rwanda. You know, I was chasing that feeling. I was trying to get it back, but I could never quite reach it. It was like the Great Gatsby. It was like eluding me, you know. I was reaching for it and it kept receding before me.
You believed in the green light.
I believed in the Rwanda light, you know. Yeah. I believed in the Rwanda light at dawn. And Rwanda was kind of like a big milestone moment in my mental health where I was like, oh, if I can just get back to this place, then I think I can start having a lot of breakthrough. But yeah, you know, early 20s, you know, up until recent years, still would experience massive highs followed by massive lows. And depression was just part of the fabric of my life. And I just come to accept it.
And then what was the next turning point in your journey? Because it sounds like Rwanda was a big turning point.
And yeah, we, you know, so this is where things come beautifully full circle for us. The next big turning point was you, Stephen Ilardi. I was at a real, you know, I was in the middle of a depressive episode. I feel like I've kind of had my tent pitched on rock bottom like many, many times just on the journey with depression. But I was in that place once again and a real sense of desperation because my wife was pregnant. And I think like a lot of, you know, young guys, the pressure, and I will use that word, the pressure of a newborn child on the way. I was like, dude, you got to shape up here. You know, like that heavy judge instead of that encouraging coach. I was like, dude, like you said in your head, in your mind's eye, that you would be done with all this by the time that you're a dad, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, I had just experienced like a particularly brutal depressive episode and had experienced suicidal thoughts, which is quite common for me whenever I have a depressive episode. And I've learned, I'll just signpost this here now, I've had amazing breakthrough of learning to distinguish between that they're just thoughts rather than my actual belief and learning to really detach myself from that. And there's been amazing kind of breakthrough in that area. But I remember being in a place of total desperation and I actually called my doctor. And I was like, give me anything that you have. I can't do this on my own. And I want to go on drugs. I'll do anything that I possibly can to make this feeling go away. Now, the NHS, the National Health Service over here, we don't pay for our healthcare in the United Kingdom and Ireland and a lot of Europe. And that's amazing. Often leads to very long waiting times. So I remember,
who could
for
have
example,
possibly predicted?
So I remember this as a, like a scary story for you. I remember like my mom referring me to like a suicidal thing whenever I was 12. And I remember getting a phone call when I was 14.
Oh, come on.
So, you know, I'll just park that there. So I called my doctor and there was like a 3 or 4 week delay. And in that time, I had done like a quick search on Kindle and I'd come across your book, The Depression Cure, and I read it. And do you know what the depression cure was for me? It was the blueprint for why Rwanda worked. Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was, here's 6 steps for overcoming depression without the use of drugs. And it's all about the therapeutic lifestyle. It's all about the hunter-gatherer lifestyle and how we can bring that into the modern 21st century world. So your book for me was kind of like the missing piece of the puzzle that tied together all of my lived experience, all of my knowledge, all of the things that I knew worked. And you give me like an Alcoholics Anonymous program to follow. And I am like, I'm a bit of a program guy. It's like, yes, dude, I love tick boxes. It's like, oh, okay, exercise 3 times a week, 35 minutes, get your heart rate over, you know, for me, 165 BPM. Great. I can do that. I can work it into my schedule. I can tick the box. Okay, light therapy, dust out the old light box again. I now am fully committed to it because I have the why behind it. And that's why I think your book is so powerful, because we're told time and time again, you got to exercise more. You got to get your 8 hours of sleep. You got to clean up your diet, like da, 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 da. And you gave the why in a framework of science and research in a way that's so easy to digest that it's not just a, oh, I'm going to go to the gym because I know I'm supposed to. It's like, no, I'm so excited to go here because I know that this is going to make such a big difference in my brain. Or I can't wait to eat some fish tonight, even though it costs a little bit more money, because I believe in omega-3 now because your book did a really wonderful job of laying that out to me. So I was so invigorated and so inspired and so empowered by reading that book, particularly, like I said, in the context of Rwanda, that I just said, look, my doctor called me back finally like a month later, and I was like, look, I'm actually feeling really, really good now. I'm in a really great place. Let me have another go at this. And I had a go at your program. I worked the program hard. I followed the steps. I ticked the boxes. And it was the first time in my life since Rwanda that I didn't have a depressive episode for 6 months. And for me, I was like, dude, this is the breakthrough that I needed to be confident about taking the next step forward in my mental health journey.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's so inspiring. And I don't think I ever fully realized for you that one of the values of that book, but also just the framing of depression, yep, as a disease of civilization,
yep,
as the result of a mismatch between the way most of us are living now and the ways that our brains and bodies and our genes, frankly, are expecting us to be living, that the key piece for you, maybe more than anything else, was a kind of just validating, yep, your own history, validating your own experience, and giving a framework of like, okay, so there are very concrete ways in which what I'm doing with my body, with my sleep, with my diet, with my light exposure, with my activity, you know, all these, with my rumination, dwelling on negative thoughts or not, with my community, that they're all having this influence. The other thing I just wanted to maybe shine a little bit of a spotlight on, because it really jumped out at me, is when you were talking about your earliest attempts to understand and deal with depression, you were only focusing on one level. It's an important level, but it was the level of our negative thinking.
Yeah.
And that somehow the way you framed it was like, if I could just get my thinking right, if I can just finally, you know, that's going to solve everything. And what we've been really clear about, and I think what you've learned through your own experience, is depression will hit us, our brain, our body, our minds, at about 10 different levels of organizational complexity, from the molecular to the neurochemical to the hormonal to the neurophysiological to the cognitive, affective, behavioral, social. And if there's something driving it at a very low level, and in your case, I'm virtually certain that neuroinflammation, this inflammatory response in the brain that almost certainly was kicked off at age 11 by that Epstein-Barr viral infection, which is notorious for causing neuroinflammation, which can then drive depression from the bottom up. And if we don't address it at that level, it's very unlikely that we're ever going to, yeah, be free.
And like in your kind of framework, I was just had one piece of the pie, like 1/6 of the whole picture, to the point now where in an Irish context, I'm always kind of trying to really hit people hard on the biological components of depression, particularly the treatments, because we are so inundated Like, we've got the talk therapy bit, and I was experiencing in my own life where I was in a place of like real wholeness, and I was like, dude, like I know we've never fully arrived, but I was like, dude, I'm feeling pretty healed. Like, all the family stuff, like all the past stuff, like I feel like I've worked through it. Why the hell am I still getting depressed?
Yeah.
And it's because I wasn't hitting the biological components.
And by the way, I mean, there are other people who try to address depression at a purely biological level.
Yeah,
and of
that's
course,
the
that's
thing.
You know, a lot of people that are all they do is take the medication. And you and I are not anti-medication. I mean, I'll speak for myself. I'm certainly not anti-medication. I think we have to be really realistic about what it does and doesn't do, can and can't do.
Yeah.
And sadly, it hasn't nearly lived up to the hype, but it's helped some people. But many, many people think, oh, well, I have a chemical imbalance. I'm going to throw these chemicals at it. That's going to fix everything. And they don't address anything else in their life. And then they're shocked when that doesn't get the job done, or at least doesn't get it done in a way that's enduring. And so really, one of the most exciting things I think about your journey and just our journey together as podcasters. Well, you know what? No, I'm going to put this in the form of a question. As you can tell, Hugh, I'm still learning the craft of conducting an interview.
You're doing a good job.
Oh, you're way too kind. So here we go. I'm going to put my interviewer cap back on. So Hugh, why are you doing this podcast?
Yeah,
why
nice.
Are you doing this podcast?
Yeah, it's cool. So actually, I had the chance to speak to a group of people last week. And one of the things I said to them is my journey, like a lot of stories, is kind of like it's a story of three parts. And I've shared those three parts today where it's like, you know, the first 10 years of my life, awesome, really cool, great. Second decade of my life, not so good. A lot of turmoil, a lot of suffering, a lot of rock bottom. But now this third act, as it were, and I hope this third act continues for many more decades to come, is experienced massive breakthrough in my own life, experienced huge, huge healing in my own journey with depression. And now I've got this amazing opportunity to share my experience with so many other people. And I do that on so many different levels. Podcasting is a big part of that, but I'm involved in a lot of youth groups here locally, and I kind of do like the speaking circuit around the place. And I'm always trying to help people have that kind of like aha moment and give people the tools that I experienced and even the language around what they may be experiencing. And so I'm doing this podcast because I want to share my story, and I don't want to share my story as some sort of like ego trip. Like, I want to share it as a way to encourage and empower other people. And not only that, but I have been sharpening my craft of podcasting for 5 years now. You know, I think I've conducted something like 600 podcast interviews, which is crazy.
Dude, I think you've got your 10,000 hours in.
I think I'm working towards it. I was trying to work it out the other day, but I'm definitely like, I'm on my way to my 10,000 hours. And so I have a platform in podcasting of an audience. I also have an ability and a gift that I've been sharpening. And so I'm like, why not use this platform and why not use this gift to help people in the mental health space? And because depression is so close to my heart, I'm so excited that we've made this decision to kind of focus down on depression and do the depression cure. It's really, really exciting to me. So that's the answer. The answer is because one of my life mantras is to be who you needed when you were younger. And so obviously it comes from this kind of like desire of like, if only there was a Hugh James in my life when I was 13. You know, if only there was a Hugh James in my life when I was 16. And so a lot of everything I do really across multiple domains comes from this place. But I also have noticed this kind of very strange and humbling thing where my story actually can also help people who are much further along the life journey, you know. And I've had 60-year-olds reach out. I've had, you know, 70-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds. And so there is something universal about suffering. We've talked about this before. And I've had the opportunity to experience suffering from a very young age. And that obviously sucked. But the gift of that, or the opportunity in that, is I've been able to hit the ground running in my 20s here.
Yeah.
Particularly using words and podcasts and audio and speaking and communication to share some of the treasure that I have dug up from the cave with other people that resonates with them and helps them move from a place of brokenness to a place of wholeness.
That's beautiful. Okay, I know we had agreed beforehand we're going to try to keep this to about 30 minutes. We're a little bit over, but I got one last question for you if you're game. Let's do it. Okay, so what at the moment, because I know that you, like I am, are a big fan of relentlessly experimenting, trial and error. What can I do to make things even better, to step up your game on the wellness front, on the wholeness front, on the well-being front. What are you most excited about in your current armamentarium, your current set of experiments, particularly as it relates to your well-being?
Yeah, so like the experimentation I encourage everybody to embark on, like safely and with common sense, of course. But for me, the experimenting is so important because it gives me a sense of ownership, it gives me a sense of control. And even if I'm not getting the results that I want to see, it at least helps me feel like I'm moving forward. And I've only got to where I am today because, okay, this hasn't worked. Let me try something else. And you get kind of fast forward shortcut moments with resources like your book and hopefully this podcast. But what I'm really looking at currently is actually slowing down my life like exponentially. So since I've been 16, I've been kind of running like this 120 mile an hour momentum and speed and starting a business and starting a family and doing this and doing that and multiple podcasts and, you know, a lot of self-care and aggressive self-care, I suppose you could say. And then what I'm really looking at now is like, what if I just took a lot off that plate? What if instead of operating at 110%, what if I operated at 70%? And I can have this feeling that like a lot of my depressive episodes are somehow linked to this idea of like burnout and stress and pushing the body too hard. And so I'm just trying to like take a couple of deeper, slower breaths. Where I maybe did 4 podcasts in a day, I now try to do 2 podcasts. I've been really looking at my sleep and trying to make sleep of an ultimate priority in my life to the point where, you know me, I used to be like a 6 a.m. guy. I mean, other times in my life, I was a 4 a.m. guy. And now I've been experimenting with our month off even of not setting an alarm. I'm trying to be more like you. Or if I do set an alarm, at the very least, it's 8 hours after whenever I get into bed.
Good.
And that's really new for me because I was always trying to cram as much into my life. I was a chronic optimizer. And just recently, even just thinking about Rwanda, it's like, you know, this is not the human way. Like, we are not machines. We cannot squeeze every last ounce of power and productivity out of ourselves. And I've been trying to take that more kind of slow, unhurried, unbusy approach to life and be okay with some of the trade-offs that are involved with that.
Absolutely. And
that looks like doing less in work. It looks like doing less with friends sometimes. Our last weekend there, if you looked at it, it was like borderline watching paint dry. And I think there is something about having a young family as well that is quite conducive to that. But definitely, I already have noticed a massive benefit, of course, on the depression front, but just in the overall life front, it helps me prioritize the things that are more important to me, you know, and I'm walking Beautiful. More than I ever was. I'm outside more. I'm like I said, I'm sleeping more. I'm having more time to cook healthier meals and it feels good. And so I think this experiment will be one that will stick.
I love it. One thing I'm thinking about is this would be a great topic for a future podcast episode is when we look at modern day Aboriginal groups.
Oh, nice pivot. Yeah.
Who give us, I think, some really extraordinary insights into the way in which our ancestors lived for hundreds of thousands of years. What we find typically is they have different modes or different gears that they go into. And they have these extraordinary seasons of rejuvenation and rest and recreation. And it might be a few months where they're kind of, you gave that lovely image of watching the paint dry. I mean, it's a few steps up from that, right? I mean, they're still in the game, but they might, if we can just use, you know, a sort of pseudo quantitative metric, like maybe they're going at half speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
While they're getting recharged and replenished and rejuvenated. And then they will inevitably have stretches of maybe a few weeks, maybe a couple months, where like, a, you know, when you're playing back your podcast on 2x or 1.5x or whatever, where it's just full tilt. But they're ready for it because they've put in the work. And I use that word ironically. They put in the work of rejuvenating, of allowing themselves. And I think so many of us in the modern world, especially if we're prone to drivenness and high achievement or wanting to achieve at a certain level, we get caught up in a culture of, I've got to be going full tilt, 24/7, 365. And that is absolutely, I think as you so beautifully put it, it's just a recipe for burnout and eventually even for worse, because our bodies and our brains and our minds, at some point, they're going to break down. if we don't take those really, really important seasons of rejuvenation. So I'm really glad to hear it.
That's why we work, bro. It's the two sides of the coin, you know? I bring the rambly experience and you bring the hard-hitting, razor-sharp, like, research.
Oh, you know, this has been... I tell people not infrequently when they ask about this partnership, this podcast, and I'm like, and our listeners have heard me say it. We've got the writer, we've got the scientist, we've got the poet, we got the old geezer, we got the young geezer. we've got the Irishman, we've got the American. It's a beautiful thing when two people can have such complementary sorts of experiences and skill sets, yeah, and yet find so much common ground and so much enjoyment in, you know, it's like, oh, that's really cool. You know, Q just went to a place where I would never in a million years think to go. But then sometimes we'll find these surprising kind of, you know, it's like, oh, he just quoted like some rap lyric that I actually have. What the hell is happening right now? This is amazing. Although I quoted a Hamilton lyric sometime back.
That's true. And
you were like, what, Hamilton? What is it? Was that an American? What is that? All right.
I'll be honest. Well, I still haven't seen Hamilton. So
Disney Plus is all I'm going to say. By the way, we get absolutely no kickback from the good people at Disney Plus. Although full disclosure, I did work for a couple of years for ESPN, which is owned by the Disney company. But
oh,
but
wow, that's like what, yeah, that's like beyond full disclosure. That's like forensic investigation.
Yeah. I'm
glad
want,
you covered our ground there, though.
I didn't want anybody to think that I was still on the payroll of
Big Mickey.
Big Mickey, Big Mouse. Yeah. All right. Well, on that really silly note, we're so grateful for all of you. Hugh has a whole outro thing that he's going to do real quick, though. So, Hugh, I turn it over to you.
Do you know what? I like that. Outsource it to the environment. That's the goal, isn't it?
That always.
All right, guys, ready? This is it. This is the shtick.
Here's the shtick.
Thank you very much for supporting us on Patreon. Genuinely, it's been really lovely to have a lot of messages from you guys, particularly as we've made this transition into Depression Cure for our new branding and the new thing we're kind of going to hang our hat on, as it were. And we really appreciate your support. It's been lovely. We've got some really great Q&As that I can't wait to send to you, Steve. So again, I should be more clear. If you are a patron member, which means you support the podcast for as little as the, I don't know, price of a hipster cup of coffee or a beer or something once a month, you get access to our private community. And what does that look like currently? It means you can submit questions for us for our Q&A. So we do a Q&A episode once a month. We've got loads of great voice Q&As from some of our patrons, and so we're really excited to tackle that in an upcoming episode. And we are completely crowdfunded. We are not supported by Big Mouse, as Alardi just said. We have no sponsors. We don't run ads on the show. We believe in editorial integrity. It's really, really important to us, especially in the self-care, health, educational space. Things can get real murky and real messy, and so we just want to stay away from that. We want to always make sure that what we're saying is stuff that we believe in, stuff that's for your benefit, and that there's no kind of commercial sticky fingers wrapped up in the middle of that. And so we're completely 100% crowdfunded. We really appreciate, like I said, you guys who have taken the step to do that. If you're interested, you can check out the link in the episode of this podcast wherever you're listening, and you can click that, you can check it out. If it's for you, if you're interested, we'd love to see you. If you don't have the means to do so, that's also perfectly fine as well. The show is free and it will continue to be free as long as we continue to do it. Other thing I will say is depressioncure.co or .co. I'm not sure how I'm going to say that going forward, but that's our new web address. If you type that in, it'll be routed to our website. There's a whole bunch of great episodes on there. I think we have a back catalog of like 30 plus shows now. And it's an easier way, I think, than scrolling through the podcast feed to figure out what you want to listen to next. And actually, other than that, I'm just going to say thank you. I'm going to end the episode there. Steve, thank you for being a wonderful host today. You've made me feel very comfortable. You hopefully drew out some treasure there with those awesome questions. And I look forward to doing the next one with you, man.
Well, likewise. And I just want to say thank you for just being so open and transparent about your journey. And, you know, not everyone has that gift. And as you've experienced many times, I think, in your life already, being willing to share your story in such an unguarded way is a genuine gift to others and gives them a feeling of being seen and validated and maybe gives them the courage to take some of the very same steps that you've taken on the path to healing. So I really appreciate it. I learned a lot today, actually. So that was pretty cool.
Awesome, bro.
Thanks.
See you next
time.
Okay.
Be well.